Continuing in mitzvah Tuf Yud Tes 419, it's the mitzvah to learn Torah. What are the parameters of the mitzvah? The Chol Echad Mi'Yisrael, the paragraph that begins, any one from the Jewish people, Chayev B'Talmud Torah, as we'll see, it applies to males. We'll discuss that later. Bein Oni Bein Oshir, whether you're rich or poor. In other words, if you're rich, you might be tempted to hang around all day and eat and drink and relax because you don't need to work so much, and you'll get in the habit of just taking it easy, and you don't want to learn. No, you have to learn even if you're rich and if you're poor. So if you're poor, you might be so consumed with trying to support your family, you don't have so much money at your disposal, that you'll try to work so hard that you'll forget about learning. But that is not allowed. You must learn whether rich or poor. Bein bari, bein bali yisurin. Whether you're healthy or whether you have afflictions. So if you're healthy, you might think, hey, you know, I'm feeling good, I can go play sports. And if you're not feeling well, then you might say, oh, I feel so gross. You know, I really can't concentrate well. I'm not going to learn. I'm just going to watch a movie. Nope. All these types of people are required to push through it and to learn Torah. Obviously. Totally impossible, but under any type of circumstances where it might be possible, you have to do it. Learning Torah is the best skula, so to speak, for getting better. The Gemara talks about, gives examples of darshaning different types of psukim that mention different body parts and saying how the Torah is effective for this body part and that body part. And if you learn well, so it's a school that you're going to get better. Vafilu ani amechazra apsochem, even one who's collecting charity. Vafilu bal isho vanim, even if you have a family to support. Hakol chayovim likboa itim la Torah bayom uvalayla. Every person, male at least, must make a point to at least learn a little bit of Torah, both during the day and during the night. So it says that if you're really, really in a pinch and you are totally consumed with other things and you don't have time to learn Torah, so saying Kriya Shema in the morning and the evening is at least the minimum type of fulfillment of learning Torah. Yeah.
Women say, you know, in the morning brachas, they say bracha on, you know, Lasot B'Dvei Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, I mean, does Sephardim at least have a problem with that? You know,
no. Lemaisa, according to everyone, women are allowed to make the bracha on the Torah, and the question is, why should that be? If women are exempt from learning Torah, and you have a bracha on brachas haTorah in the morning, they require to say this bracha before learning Torah, and that exempts your entire learning for the day, so why should women be allowed to say the bracha? So if you're Ashkenazi, so no problem, because women have we follow the Rishonim, that say even for mitzvahs that women are exempt, so they're still allowed to make a bracha, because asher kitchanu mitzvahs of itzivanu, meaning in a larger perspective, God commanded us, the Jewish people, to perform this mitzvah. So therefore, you're allowed to make a bracha on mitzvah asei shazman groma. So, or here also, it's not a mitzvah asei shazman groma, but it says v'shinantam levanecha, and Chazal learned that applies only to males. Okay, so that's one explanation. So how are Sephardi women allowed to make a bracha on Birkas HaTorah? Because it's very unusual that a woman will go the entire day without hearing any Torah. So if you're stuck. If you're not allowed to make the bracha, then you're not allowed to learn. Although the truth is that it's not exactly true. Because if your hands are tied, you're not allowed to make a bracha, then maybe you would be allowed to learn even without making the bracha. Okay. But the reason that even Sephardic women make the bracha on Birkas HaTorah is because another understanding of the Birkas HaTorah is that it's not a Birkas HaMitzvah per se, even though it says Asher Kishanu Mitzvah V'Tzivanu La'Asok V'Divrei Surah, that fundamentally the Birkas HaTorah is a Birkas HaShvach, that it's a bracha of praise of God for having given us the Torah, and not a bracha on the mitzvah to learn Torah per se. So that's why women are required, in fact, not only optional, that we hold that women are in fact required to make Birkas HaTorah in the morning, and is not merely an optional thing. Some recommend, though, interestingly, I don't think this is the minhag, but some poskim say, so what's the minimum of Birkas HaTorah in the morning? We have this whole long series of brachas, but b'dieved, your yotzi, even if you just did the last one, asher b'char banu mikol mimen asalanu astor sobrachat Hashem nosei na Torah. So if you just make that one, your yotzi. So some poskim I've seen recommend that women should just make that one. Because then you get out of the whole problem of Asher Kichanu Mitzvosav Tzivanu La'asok B'divrei Sorah, that they're not commanded. They don't say, if they don't say that part, so I do not believe that that is in fact the minhag. But I have seen that brought down. But the Maisa, women are required to make Birkas HaTorah in the morning.
You mean you have to say the
bracha Asher Bacharban Mikol Mimen Aslanu B'Torah Sorah Bracha Hashem Nosein HaTorah, and then you say the little thing in the beginning. You don't have to say the those psukim. You know the. Those are just sort of chosen almost at random, isn't it? Not exactly random, but because you have to say what? Because
you have a meaning, it seems to me. You know, when it is not hard to think of what
it's really, like,
right, it's a bracha. Okay, fine. But
so the
but you don't have to
tefillah and so on and so forth.
You
know,
if you don't say, you don't, if you're still yotzei if you learn right afterwards, mm-hmm. even if you're not saying these exact psukim, right, it's perfectly right. fine. Right. There was an old minhag, by the way, the old Ashkenazi minhag, which is in certain German shuls. In Breuers, they do both. But in certain German shuls, they say Birkas HaTorah right before Parshas HaTamid. So they say Baruch Atah Hashem, Nosein HaTorah, and the whole series. And then they say Vayidaber Hashem Tzavetz Bnei Yisrael. Then they say Ezum Makoman, and then they say the Rebbe Shmuel right then and there. So if you have that minhag, then you have a problem because you're not supposed to say the Parshas HaTamid before daybreak. You're not supposed to say Parshas HaTamid before Alos HaShachar. So therefore, that's why the Vilna Gaon, I think, also had that minhag. So that's why the Vilna Gaon used to get up really early to learn, so it was too early to say Parshas HaTamid. So he just used to, wherever he was holding and learning, you know, would just say the Berakas HaTorah and then go straight into Maseches Kalim or whatever he happened to be learning at the time. So that's also an option. The reason that you do the either Yivarech Hashem Yishmercha, then you say a Braisa, then another Braisa, or you say the Parshas HaTamid, then Ezu Mekoman, then Rabbi Shmuel, right after Birkas HaTorah, is because right away you want to fulfill the idea that you're supposed to learn, as we'll see later in the Sefer Chinuch, that you're supposed to learn both Tanakh, all three, Tanakh and Mishnah, meaning straight Halacha without necessarily delving too deeply into it, and Talmud, which means not necessarily the Gemara, Bavli, and Yerushalmi, but any exercise in delving deeply into Halacha, comparing different sources and trying to make sense of it and to learn new things out of it, that's called the Talmud. So that's why you say all three things. You have the Tanakh, which is the Parshas HaTamid. Then you have Ezum Mekoman, which is a Mishnah. Even though, again, we're not talking about... It happens to be a Mishnah. But when we say Mishnah, it doesn't mean... has to be part of Shishos Hizri Mishnah. It means Halachos. It means straight Halachos. Then you have the Brice of the Rabbi Shmuel, which is not exactly Talmud, but since it discusses the methods by which you derive things from the Torah in a deep analytical way, then that's an allusion, at least, to the concept of learning Talmud every day. That's why I have those three things. And but again, it's not strictly required. If you're saying Berachas HaTorah and you go straight into your learning, that's also okay. I mean, you are supposed to say the Parshas Tamid and Ezum Mekoman and Rabbi Shmuel every day anyway, because part of the Seder HaKorbanos. But it's not, strictly speaking, need to be said right after the Berachas HaTorah. Fine. So even if you have a wife and children, you're supporting them, so you have to learn both during the day and the nighttime. And the Rambam waxes very poetic about learning at night. He says that even though you have to learn both in day and at night, those who want Kisra Shel Torah, which is the concept that we discussed last time, those who wish to be crowned with the crown of Torah, which is an optional level of super devotion and self-unification with the Torah. So those who want it, it says that most of those people acquire their wisdom at night. That meaning they push themselves to stay awake, or they get up very early in the morning, or, you know, just it's just a quiet time where it's just themselves and the Torah, and it's a very spiritually significant type of time. So it says most of the true wisdom and true bonding with the Torah that people accomplish is accomplished learning at nighttime. And it said, the Rambam also writes, that one should be very careful for this reason, not to go any night without learning Torah. That even if it's I think, I don't know if the Rambam uses this exact phrase, but a later poskim say that even on the night of the summer solstice, which is the night of the shortest night in the year, and people are probably dying to go to sleep, maybe sometimes even before night actually falls, according to halacha, especially in northern latitudes. So you should make sure to at least learn a little bit. You should not let a whole night go without learning any Torah, which is a very big musar that sometimes... sometimes if I'm somehow been very busy all day and if I would like to go to sleep, so it's very important that I try to, even if it's just for a couple minutes, even if you not to jump into bed right away, but rather to take out a sefer and just, even if it's just a couple lines, to make a point of learning every single night. Shenemar v'gisa bo yomam v'layla. It says by Sefer Yehoshua, thou shalt... delve into the Torah, think about the Torah at night, during the day, and during the night. Utchilas dino shel adam achar hamavis. Now, when you first get up to Shemayim, what's the Kadosh Baruch Hu going to say to you? Al shenis batal bin alimud. You know, in the Gemara in Brachas discusses the things that God is going to ask you after you die. So he says here that the first thing that God's going to ask you actually is whether... He says, "You, what are you? Not asking necessarily, but is going to comment on all the times that you could have learned Torah and you didn't." The pasuk really means talking about how you shouldn't fight too much. It's like opening a spigot of water. So, one thing flows from another. So Chazal have a homiletical interpretation of this that it says, "Poter mayim," if you would do away with water. If you send it away, literally, reishis madon, that's the first of the judgment that you're going to be judged in the world to come regarding the regarding learning Torah. Kilomar, mishapot ratzu min amayim, reishis ktata hi lenafsho achar shiyamus. That if if you exempt yourself from water, then it's going to be the first judgment. Vein mayim ela Torah. We know that Torah is called water in many cases. Shenemar, hoy kol tzameh l'chula mayim. Anyone who's thirsty, go to water. I mean, spiritually thirsty, the correct approach is to learn some Torah. Nim shelu divrei Torah l'mayim. Levi she'ein Torah miskemes, el b'ish dako shval ruach velo b'gvalev. That the Torah is only truly sustainable in a person who is lowly and humble, and not someone who's haughty and arrogant. If you see someone who is very haughty and arrogant and purports to be a great Talmud Chacham, so you have to be very, very careful. We know that the Gemara talks about, when talking about a teacher by whom one should learn Torah, so it says that you should seek someone who's domel and malach Hashem Tzevakos, that a correct Torah teacher should be someone. Obviously, there's no human being. Everyone has faults. No one's literally like an angel, but you see that even if a Torah teacher is seemingly completely brilliant and has mastered all the Torah and can come up with brilliant new ideas and can teach very well, still one should only seek to learn Torah by a teacher who has very pleasant ways about him and seemingly very righteous and their issues. So sometimes you could tell. Sometimes it comes as a big surprise, but sometimes... I don't want to get into details, but sometimes when you have fallen rabbis, well, sometimes you could have told beforehand there was something a little off. Even if you couldn't quite put your finger on it, I don't know if you could apply the epithet of Doma Lemalach Hashem Tzivakos. So one has to be extremely...
How would you know what Malach looks like?
And that means looking. It means that a person seemingly on a very high spiritual level, both in between themselves and God and between themselves and other people.
Angelic. You can say somebody's angelic without ever having really met angel, right?
You can't so much observe what's going on between them and God, but you can... Sometimes
again, you have to go by what's you right. You never know what's going. You never know what's exactly going on in someone else's head. But based on any observation that you can of them and interaction that they have and their general reputation, so it's important to find a Torah teacher who's as much as possible fits the bill of Domel Malach Hashem Tzivakos. So here we say Kemosh Shemayim Gamkein and Omdim Beharim Ela Ba'amokim. Same thing. Water doesn't last very long on top of a mountain. Meaning a haughty, tall person, not physically tall, but emotionally tall. then it goes to always to the valley. So somebody who's very humble and modest and low, again, not overly so necessarily, but just in general, tries to maintain a low demeanor rather than trying to always be on the top, is the person in whom the Torah will find sustainability. That you have to divide your time into three. What are the three? Shlish be'esek Torah shebichsav, a third Tanakh. There are very few, I don't know, Orthodox Jews, maybe, nowadays, who literally, all the time, if you take up all the time they spend learning, it would be a third Tanakh. We'll discuss maybe. Maybe women is different. Could be. V'shlish be'esek Torah shebalpeh, and a third learning the Torah shebalpeh. Kelomar, lahargil atzmolios baki begirsas ha-mishnayos v'abraiso shetiyan shkuros befiv. Meaning just to memorize, not necessarily with deep analysis, but to memorize the Mishnah and the Braisa, basic halacha. V'shlish lahavin ha'inyonim mishoresh. One, to analyze the roots and figure out how everything is derived from the Chumash, and to compare it to another, and which opinion makes the most sense and why. So those types of things is called Talmud. That's called Talmud. Velo yashis kolibo ba'achas man. You shouldn't only focus on one of them. Penishka chashar, lest you forget the rest. Ushloshtan hen ikar ha-Torah she'ev sheladasu sazulasam. You have to know all these three things in order to fully understand the Torah.
No time for sleeping or eating.
No.
Well, a third of your time that you spend learning, however much time that is.
A third of your learning time.
The Rambam gives a very, everybody quotes how cute the Rambam's his presentation of this is. He says, so let me give you an example of what I mean dividing your time into thirds. So let's say you're not a total scholar. You're just a regular balabas who has a job and is supporting his family, so you only have 9 hours a day to learn. So 3 hours you should spend on Tanakh, 3 hours you should spend on Mishnah, and 3 hours you should spend on Talmud. So it's a very...
Actually, many times, in fact, there was a limited number of hours you could work at a profession. You know, for example, if you're a farmer in the winter, very little to do,
Right.
Right, I mean, it's like the amount of work available many times is not,
But if there was no light for doing your tailoring,
Right, so I mean, it's just thinking nowadays, it's a very humorous Rambam, and even for the Rambam himself, there's a famous letter that he wrote to one of his Talmidim. One of his Talmidim wanted to come visit him and ask Shailas or whatever. So he writes how busy he is, and he's always going to the Sultan because the Sultan has medical problems that he has to deal with, and then when he comes back to the Jewish area, so then all the Jews are lined up to ask him Shailas and Eitzes and all these things. He says he has no time, so I don't know if the Rambam himself, at least towards the end of his life, had 9 hours a day to learn.
Are there any yeshivas which just have this equal thirds program, and if so, how long do they stay in business?
I don't think there are any yeshivas currently in existence that have the third. So the question is why that's the case. So famously, Tosfos writes, quotes Rabbeinu Tam on the Gemara that discusses this tripartite division by saying that this third business applied only in ancient times when the Torah Shebal Peh wasn't written. So all you had was Tanakh, and you used to learn Tanakh, and then you had to learn the Mishnayos Baal Peh, and then the rest of the third of the time, you were just, in your brain, analyzing it. So it says Rabbeinu Tam that now that the Torah Shebal Peh is written down, and we have the Talmud Bavli, which is a gigantic work, which quotes tons of psukim, and it quotes tons of Mishnayos, and it quotes tons of brises, and it has an analysis in it. So he says you could be yotzei the whole thing by Talmud Bavli, because it's all combined, bolul, Bavli, right? Right. So it's all combined with all three things, so they'll maybe not be exactly a third, but that's what he writes. But okay, so not everyone accepts that, but we fundamentally accept the idea that the division doesn't have to be so stark in adhering to exactly what Chazal said nowadays, that the whole way we learn is different. And even the Rambam himself writes that when you get to a certain point, this division doesn't make sense anymore. If you've learned, if let's say you're 30 years old, and you've learned all of Tanakh 100 times, so you don't necessarily need to spend a third of your time on Tanakh anymore. You just don't. You'll chazer it You'll review it occasionally, you know, every couple of years or something is going forward, but it just doesn't make sense anymore to spend a third of your time learning Tanakh. That's what he says. So then the analysis is going to become a much larger percentage of the time, and that's okay. You don't need to adhere to this exact division. So for those reasons, we don't necessarily adhere to this exact schedule anymore, but again, it is important to spend time on each of these things and not just learn exclusively Gemara. That if your yeshiva doesn't teach anything else but Gemara, so you have to make a point to learn Tanakh on your own
with a flashlight under the covers.
Yeah,
But isn't the second two parts are also like Bekiyas? Like means you have to cover.
Yeah, that's the Mishnah part is Bekiyas. Yeah,
and the third part is to do in depth, like to learn in depth.
Right.
Most yeshivas today concentrate on the third part, meaning they can learn five daf for the whole zman or the whole year.
That's right.
And then they don't bother with the second part.
So the reason that some yeshivas spend so much time on the deep analysis, already starting from the close to the beginning of when you're learning Gemara, is because they hold that, again, this since the whole Torah Shebe'al Peh is written nowadays, and anybody who's somewhat competent can pick up a book and read, the main job of a yeshiva is to teach you how to think and to analyze, as opposed to teach the actual material itself. But if you're only learning five daf of Gemara for the whole year, that's still a problem. I don't know exactly why it hasn't been reformed. By now, if I hate to use that word, but I don't. So,
there were a few different approaches to how much time. For example, the Maharal writes, starts five. There are a few different.
What do you mean? The Maharal writes, the Pirkei Avos says you start at five.
Right. Yeah. So, according to the schools in Israel that they do first.
There are schools in Israel, yes, but that's talking about the ages, not in terms of the division of the three.
No.
There are schools, Zilbermans. There's a community that's based in the old city of Yerushalayim that tries to follow everything like the Vilna Gaon. I'm not sure. There are some issues with that approach. I'm not going to go into now, but one of the things that they do is they actually teach all of Mishnayos, all Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, before they start teaching Gemara. So that's a lot of people like that.
And what age are we talking about here?
I don't think it follows the exact ages. But again, it would be starting about five, and then you teach all of... Tanakh. They're more focused on Tanakh than other yeshivas. I don't know if they teach all Tanakh before they start learning Mishnayos, but they teach all Mishnayos before they start learning Gemara. Gemara would be much later than normal. Maybe... I don't know. I don't want to even say.
Various variations of that also.
Yeah, yeah.
Does anybody teach Aramaic grammar before starting Gemara? I mean, that seems like a more useful,
Did anybody teach you English grammar before you started speaking English? it's supposed to be natural.
Yeah.
No, we can. Oh, no. People who are interested in English grammar, even though they speak already English fluently, can study English grammar. So the idea is that Aramaic should be so ingrained, Hebrew and Aramaic should be so ingrained that you don't need to study the grammar before studying them. If you want to study the grammar afterwards.
But usually people don't grow up at the age of two starting to talk Aramaic. You know?
Right, but the Aramaic phrases that are in the Gemara, when you have long agadic passages, they're all in Aramaic, so then you might have a point. But the basic phrases and the get back and forth of the regular halachic discussion are just some stock phrases. They're not usually... You don't really have to have Aramaic fluency in order to understand them. You should. I'm not saying you should. Aramaic should be taught more. And that's why Reb Belsky, he always used to... I mean, he had a lot of things to talk about. He was a walking encyclopedia. He had knew everything about... knew a lot about very, very, very many topics. So when he used to speak to teenagers, I don't know, younger... He used to talk about the importance of Shnai Mikra Ve'echa Targum, that you have to do the Torah portion every week, twice in the Hebrew and once with the Aramaic Targum. He says, that's the way. Here you have solid text in Aramaic with tells stories and you actually get a feel for language. That if you learn the Parsha in Aramaic every week, then you'll eventually get some fluency to understand what the Gemara better as well.
Even though it's a different dialect of Aramaic.
It's not that different. Targum Unklos is not that different. Very, very similar to the Gemara. there, because the Eretz Yisrael Dik Aramaic, even though Targum Unklus was originally supposed to have been composed in Eretz Yisrael, it was redacted in Bavel. So the Targum Unklus is a more Babylonian style of Aramaic. There are Targum from Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael style Aramaic, but you know, it's not that different. You have to figure it out. It's a part of the job. Fine. So that's also interestingly, the Balatanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, was the first Rebbe of Chabad. He didn't live in Lubavitch. Hadn't gotten to Lubavitch yet. So he wrote in his Shulchan Aruch. He wrote famously a restatement of the Shulchan Aruch to include the later poskim and to make it easier to memorize and learn. So one of the things he has in there is a restatement of Hilchos Talmud Torah. So really, it's a major work where he really presents a lot of chidushim and brings in a lot of things to apply it to the way it was done, at least in 18th century Russia. And since the Rambam, there really wasn't any other until then. That was the next major new work on the Hilchos Talmud Torah. So one of the things he writes in there is talking about learning Hebrew. So that one of the how Hebrew nowadays is part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because people don't speak Hebrew growing up. So they don't understand naturally the Hebrew. So learning Hebrew is part of the mitzvah of learning Torah. So he said, but so you could skip that step, you know, and if kids are actually speaking Hebrew, so you can skip that step, and it's better to do that. So I got a lot of nachas that if I speak to my kids in Hebrew, so then it's a natural part of the. It's actually part of mitzvah Talmud Torah, teaching them Torah. It's not just a quirky linguistic exercise, but actually important for their ability to learn Torah fluently. It is ridiculous that, like we pointed out last time, there are kids who grow up in yeshiva schools and they cannot read Hebrew fluently. It's absurd. Have to do something about that. Okay. Uvechein ma sha'amru shechayev atzibur shebechol makom umakom lahoshiv. But again, just to wrap up that point, is that the idea is that since much more is written nowadays than it was before, so again, the main part of learning and teaching is to teach people how to do it. In other words, in the olden days, part of the mitzvah Talmud Torah was you had a Sefer Torah or a Chumash without, and the rest of the Tanakh without vowels, and that was it. So you had to teach your kids how to read, had to memorize all the vowels and the trope and to learn everything properly. So now all this is written. You know, you really just have to teach them how to understand it themselves and make sure to set them on the right path of learning themselves. But the intense education of the content is not as quite as important. That is the requirement of the community in every place to have melamdim. That if there's a city with no school children, then it will be destroyed. It says that the world is niskayim, that the God preserves the world even though there's so much sin in it, because of the breath of the children who are learning Torah with their teachers, because they're learning Torah in a state of purity because they never sinned. Doesn't mean they never did anything wrong, but it doesn't mean it's a sin because they don't recognize God and intend to rebel. So they never sinned yet. So therefore, that's a very, very holy enterprise. And classically, in the times of the Gemara, children only did not learn on Tisha B'Av, and I think Erev Yom Kippur, and they got out early on Pesach also, I think, or other Erev Yom Tovim. But they had school all the time.
What about December 25th?
That's the Zilberman school, do they?
They do that, yeah.
They
have no breaks. Okay, so you have to, again, you have to have real chachma to determine how to apply things to nowadays. But classically speaking, they didn't have much break from school. That if when I get free, I'm gonna learn. Maybe you will never become free. So there's a good fulfillment of lichshefneshne, which is that a lot of people nowadays It's a big Kiddush Hashem that when they retire, they go to Kollel. They were very fine Balabatim, were learning their whole lives and maybe learning a little bit as much as they could. When they retire, they really sit and learn. They go to yeshiva and they sit and learn all day. What? So that's a really wonderful opportunity that many people take advantage of nowadays. Ki lo yeda ha'adam ma yeled yom. You never know what's going to happen, so maybe you're going to die before you have a chance to learn properly. You're always going to have to, a new thing, project you have to take care of, and a new annoyance in your life. You're just going to constantly be running around. You're not going to be able to sit calmly and learn. You have to make a point of pushing yourself to learn. That if you do that and you want blessing, we have this concept that if you exert some effort in order to get closer to God, so then God is going to make it easier for you. He's going to make the path going forward easier. So if you're working as much as you need to, but you're also making time to learn, so God will see to it that you make more and more money in the amount of time that you devote to working, so you won't need to devote as much time to working to make as much money. The yoke of other people, debts, will be reduced. You'll be happy. Be great for you in Olam Haba as well. It's good to speak to one who will listen to these things. This is explained in the first perek in Maseches Kiddushin, where it talks about the obligation of a father to the son, one of which is learning to teach him Torah. Random places to in the Gemara. Benuheges mitzvazo bechol makom bechol zman. It applies in all places and all times. Bezicharim avalo benikevos. I think we have equal number, almost not exactly. Sorry, just walked in. But sometimes this year we have more nikevos than zicharim. So we have more females than males sometimes. Sometimes it's equal number. So, but technically the mitzvah of Talmud Torah does not apply to females. So maybe the four of you should go close your sefer achinuch and go home and start cooking. I don't know. So the, what is that?
Catch up on your sleep.
What?
Catch up on your sleep.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. No, it's wonderful that you come. That was just a facetious comment because of what we were talking about now, but I think it's great. Shenemar. Beneichem, you say, as Beneichem, you should teach your sons, V'darshu zichron levracha, and sometimes it just means children, but in this case, we have a received tradition that Chazal tell us that it refers to lo benoseichem, that this mitzvah does not apply to teaching your daughters, and if it doesn't apply to teaching your daughters, the daughters don't have to learn either, because the mitzvah, according to Sefer Chinuch, at least, I mean, nobody agrees with this in practice, but according to Sefer Chinuch, that the mitzvahs are all one, that teaching and learning Torah is all one mitzvah. So obviously, if one doesn't apply to women, so the other doesn't either. She doesn't have to teach her son, should she be a widow or something with a young child, so she's not required to teach him or to hire a teacher for him. If you're not required to learn, you're not required to teach either. Nevertheless, it's a proper for a woman to make sure that her sons should not be ignoramuses. That even though she's not actually obligated to teach them, she still gets a reward for it as eino mitzuvos, because it's just not proper. Why should she allow her sons to be ignoramuses? And in fact, if she's very rich or something and she could afford, she gives tons of tzedakah, then obviously would come first to make sure that her sons, to hire a tutor for her sons, because of the mitzvah of tzedakah, even if it's not in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because we know that the closer relatives are the first priority in terms of tzedakah. So classically, again, in the rabbinic literature, so when it talks about the reward that women get for Talmud Torah, so it also has this famous thing that how are women zocheh to they get the schar for Talmud Torah? That obviously the spitz of the reward that one gets in the world to come is for learning Torah. So what do you mean? Women should be able to get that also. How can women get the same level of reward? So it says that if they wait up for their husbands who come home from the Beis Medrash, and they make sure they take their sons and bring them to the cheder, so they take part in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and they get reward for the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Nowadays, of course, we have a larger institution, which is that a lot of men are not working at all. In America, it's usually for a limited time, or it's Israel for a longer time. They're not working at all; they're only learning. So the women are working to support their husbands' learning. So obviously, in such a case, it goes without saying that they are full partners to receive the reward for their husbands' learning, assuming that it's handleable. If everybody's suffering, then they probably don't get much reward at all. But if she manages, again, they don't allow the women to go to college in Eretz Israel, so then they can't get really good jobs. They get minimal paying jobs.
In these communities,
Haredi women,
all kinds of levels.
Oh, okay.
If you have a woman in America, this is very, very common that woman could be a very successful doctor or lawyer or accountant, and she could be making tons of money, really enough to support the family, especially if you didn't have tuition costs. That really eats away at things. But in Eretz Israel, they don't have so much tuition costs. But assuming not tuition costs for a second, so really it would be possible if a woman had a well-paying job, it would be 100% possible to support the family without the husband working at all, and she could be happy at her job, and they could hire a babysitter, no problem, could afford to hire a babysitter, and the husband could spend all day learning, and there's really no pressures, or everyone's happy and good. The problem is when you have, not every woman is cut out to that. A lot of women, they shouldn't be. That's not the standard way. The standard way of Jewish life is that the husband goes to work and the woman takes care of the children in the house. That's the classical model. Again, if it could be done in the other way and everyone's happy, so that would be that is totally fine. But most women are not cut out that completely, and sometimes they are not making enough money that they could totally berevach, happily support the whole family without the husband working at all. So then it's proper for the husband to go to work. And a lot of people, if you could do this, it's wonderful that if you have a job where if the husband doesn't need to make so much money and he learns one Seder a day and he learns in the morning, say, and just works in the afternoon. And again, if it can be worked out, that's a very nice way of doing it. Or if he works most of the day and comes home early and has an afternoon or a night Seder, if he works all day, comes home and has a night Seder for some time, that's obviously also a wonderful thing. The problem gets to be when you have this is obviously not for everyone, just like Kisra Shel Torah is not for everyone. That's presented in all the classical sources that's optional. That's for people who want the highest level of Torah learning. But it's not a commonplace thing. So to make it an expectation that a husband is not going to work at all and the wife is totally going to support the family, especially if she doesn't have the education and skills to make a really good salary, then that is a recipe for a lot of problems.
But in order to show, that's the recipe. It's like a standard.
Yeah, that's why it's... I'll go back to that in a second. Yeah, sorry.
I heard from my Yemenite friend that men work 6 hours and learn 6 hours. This is the usual...
Great. That's very nice. So... when you have an Eretz Yisrael, that's an expectation, so that's not such a good thing. And if you look at the original way that the whole system was set up, the mass kol system in Eretz Yisrael, so it was what you call a hora shah. It was a temporary measure. That's very funny because the whole Haredi revisionism about Rav Hirsch's system of Torim Derech Eretz is, no, that's not really the ideal Judaism. That's only Rav Hirsch said it only in 19th century Germany in order to save Orthodoxy. He felt this was the only way to do it, and as a temporary measure, he instituted Torim Derech Eretz. It's obviously not what Rav Hirsch himself really thought. He thought that was the ideal, an ideal way at least. The same thing. So we have being turned on their heads that now, I don't think it's revisionism. I think it's what it really happened, is that after the war, Torah was so devastated The Chazon Ish and others said, okay, we have only a couple hundred families that are Kolel families now in Eretz Yisrael in the early 1950s.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're going to have the men just learn as much as possible to so that we can reestablish. And also, you know, when you have people the classical way, which is that you work for a few hours a day and you learn a few hours a day, so now, A, there's much more to learn, a lot of more svarim, because people keep writing svarim all the time. And B, people are weaker. They're not. They don't concentrate. They don't. They can't learn so much in so little a time. So there was felt that people have to learn, devote a lot more time to learning if they're going to get anywhere like that. The situation was before the war of knowledge of Torah knowledge in Klal Yisrael. But now that there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of families, where this is an expectation, it's creating a lot of pressure on people and a lot of financial pressures, and that's not really right. Again, I want to emphasize again, I know I said it, but I wanted to emphasize that if a woman is making a very good salary and the family is okay, or if they, both husband and wife, choose that that he's going to get Kisra Shel Torah and not work much, if at all, and they're not going to have much money, and they're going to be, you know, mamish, one of the few people that are going to push, and they're not going to have so much money, and they're going to live b'tzimtzum, so then I'm not against that. That could be a very good thing. But the problem is, when it's done on a mass scale, it could cause a lot of issues.
So how come it's not addressed?
It is being addressed slowly. It's just hard to, because the whole system went out of control, because once it burgeons so much and you had an addition of tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands of families, and this became the norm in the community, which so rapidly expanded, so then this, it's almost as if that if you don't do this, you're not religious.
Either you're in or you're out.
Exactly. You have this crazy thing also that in the Haredi community, so the, I think mostly it falls in the Kalas family, that the Kalas family is supposed to buy the couple an apartment. So they at least have somewhere to live where they don't have to pay rent, and they can, you know, at least they won't be evicted even if they don't have money going forward, because she's not making much money and he's learning. So they might, at least they should have a roof over their heads. So most people, if they're learning, they all can't afford that for their kids. They have to buy, if you have seven daughters, so then you have to buy seven apartments. They can't afford it, so they have to collect money from Stucker. Or they go from running from one gemach to pay another gemach. Hopefully it is being addressed. It's not going to be some major toppling of the system, but it's slowly change will hopefully be coming. And the problem also the education, that they insist on no secular education, so then you can't get good jobs. So even again, I'm also not in favor, as you know, of why liberal arts education for everyone, which is not necessarily so necessary, especially on the cheshbon of Talmud Torah, but on things that will help people get jobs, and people feel they have a leaning toward a certain type of job, and they need the skills for that type of job. So then, it's not Bittul Torah. It's you have to do it in order to get a living, and you learn as much as possible. And then, you have your point that if they would learn more than in early high school or late at middle school or whatever, if they would learn more than five blad of Gemara a day, then they have more knowledge under their belts. So then, they should really be focused on learning. Again, you want the genius to shine through, so that, you know, you're going to get the best shidduch and you'll be able to impress your father-in-law with your brilliant mind. But lemaisa, the people have to learn the whole Torah. The brilliant chidushim are not as important. If people have a brilliant mind, they'll come naturally or more naturally when you learn everything. So if they would ramp up the quantity of Torah that they teach the kids before with a wedding, and they would teach a little bit of secular studies also, that would be better. But again, the system is going to change very slowly. Yeah.
Sort of a slightly meta question, regardless of different communities. The idea, when you talk about gets reward for learning Torah, whether the woman gets it for enabling the husband, or the man gets it for actually doing it, so this reward seems to be usually couched in terms of in the next life reward. But if you have the idea that there's some value in learning Torah for its own sake, because learning Torah has an effect on you, then why is learning Torah having effect on you limited to men? I mean, the woman gets, obviously she gets...
It's not, but...
She gets quote points, and I'm not a fan of points, for support, for enabling somebody else to learn Torah.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about now.
There's a value to her learning Torah also. Doesn't have to be, she doesn't have to be the next Talmud Chacham, but she could...
But that's not what we're learning about now. You're right, there is a more rationalistic thing from learning Torah that you get in this world, which is the improvement of character and wisdom and being able to perform the mitzvahs better. But that's not what we're talking about now. That Certainly, that certainly applies both to men and women. I will in a second! Okay, one second. No, no, but that's just not what we're talking about now. This is the reward, the reward with a capital R, the ultimate cosmic reward that you get for learning Torah, which is in Olam Haba. Yeah?
But also there's an issue with the emphasis of Gemara,
yeah,
which is that, you know, there's a certain... you know, kind of a mind that is good at learning Gemara.
Right.
There are other people who are equally, you know, intelligent.
Right.
You know, and who somehow or other just can't. I mean, it's like, for example, if we said, like, in secular school, whether, you know, you try to make chess champions out of everybody.
Right, right,
you
know, right, right, exactly. Right, right.
Some people can, you know, they're suited to it. Others, in fact, would be better learning halacha and midrashim and all sorts of other things.
You're 100% right. 100% right.
And then the effect on those students, in fact, who are perfectly able, can learn all sorts of different kinds of Torah, exactly. But they cannot, I don't have... particular Gemara cups.
And there's also different styles of learning Gemara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That there's the, you know, some people who are not very mathematically inclined. Mm-hmm. We don't get so much out of the, if you have different cheshbonos in exactly how the Gemara computes this and that and this and that, that's each step of the process, understand all the things, the I don't know, brisker analyses, so then... If you might be able to learn Gemara very well if you take it more literally. You look in the broader picture and find what the conclusion or what they're trying to tell you by these things, and you compare different parts of different Gemara, learning it more historically. I'm not talking about necessarily academic study, but there are also different approaches to learning Gemara. Even, again, so maybe some people are not suited to learning Gemara at all, or not very much of it. But you're right, different styles of learning Gemara, different types of brains. Yep. The Gamho Isha Shilamda Torah Schariashla. Ah, Mrs. Birnbaum, finally, are you happy now that if a woman learns Torah, she gets reward for it, both in Olam Haba and in this world. The Afal Pichen, even though a woman, just like any mitzvah, where if you volunteer to perform it, like shaking the lulav, so a woman gets reward for that mitzvah, right? Even though she's not obligated to do it, she doesn't get the same reward as for a man because a man is obligated. Even though a woman, in theory, gets reward for learning Torah, now Mrs. Birnbaum is not going to be so happy. Sivu Chachamim, Chazal said, Shelo Yelamed Adam Levito Torah. One should not teach Torah to one's daughter. Lefi... Okay, bear with me here for 1 second. Lefi shedas hanoshim kala, because women are less intellectually inclined. Umotzin divrei Torah divrei havai banios daiton. Since they're so intellectually impoverished, so they're going to learn all this Torah. They're gonna think, but they're not gonna really understand it. They're just gonna treat it as some silly pursuit because they're not gonna fully understand what's going on.
Wait,
okay.
The translation is really that they have weak minds. Come on. It's not, you know, yeah.
Tell that to Rachel Friedman.
Okay.
I just want to get that's not be euphemistic.
Okay.
That's what it says. You know?
Okay, fine. So, let's back up for a minute and try to take a broader picture. So, first of all, it says that a man should not teach his daughter Torah. Okay? It's 100% mutter, according to all opinions, even if you accept the statement at face value, that if a woman wishes to learn Torah of her own accord, she's allowed. That's only talking about whether you should institutionalize the teaching of women.
So does Torah here imply only Torah
Shebichtav? So the Rambam says that Torah Shebichtav is not necessarily, you shouldn't necessarily teach it to women lechatchila, but if you teach it to women or girls, it's not as if you taught her tiflus, which is the way the Chazal described teaching of Torah to women, as if you teach her folly. So it says, if you do it, teaching Torah shebichsav, the written Torah, Tanakh, is better than teaching the oral Torah. So that's why, again, girls' schools nowadays are more focused on the written Torah, because that is less, even though maybe you shouldn't really do it. So that's the Okay, so that's why Satmar schools, Bais Ruchel, as opposed to Bais Yankiv. Bais Yankiv is associated with the Aguda. Mm-hmm. So Bais Yankiv is bad. It has to be, they have their, Satmar has their own schools that are not associated with the Aguda, Bais Ruchel schools. So in Bais Ruchel schools, they do not teach the girls even Torah Shebaktav.
What do they teach them?
They teach them Yiddish paraphrases of Bible stories.
Yeah.
Like Tzenarena, yeah.
And not Halacha?
Oh, they teach halacha, yeah. Yes. Halacha that they need to know, they need to teach, yes. But not inside. They have, you know, Yiddish, you know, halacha handbooks that they teach them. They don't teach the classical sources inside. So in Beis Yaakov schools...
They teach them enough Hebrew to daven, though?
Yeah, Hebrew enough Hebrew to daven, yeah.
Okay.
They teach them enough Hebrew to daven.
And they do hold it, the women do have some responsibility to daven.
Yes. So that they teach... So that's they're the most extreme regarding this. Then you have Beis Yaakov schools, which do teach Torah Shebichsav, because they say, okay, so not like we teach them Tiflus, it's we'll at least do this Bizman is this. So the whole institution of the Beis Yaakov schools was a big chiddush. They said when Sarah Schneerer first wanted to found the Beis Yaakov schools. So this is very controversial. No, it says, Chazal tell us they're not supposed to teach girls Torah, at least certainly not institutionalized. If you see that there's you know, a girl who's very wise and does not have the weak mind that Chazal may be describing, so maybe it's allowed. But on a mass scale, you have to assume, unless proven otherwise, you have to assume that a girl has a weak mind. So that, again, I'm not expressing my personal opinion. I'm just telling you you have to assume that a girl has a weak mind. So now you're not allowed to teach her Torah. But if you see that she has a strong mind, so then maybe you can. But institutionally, certainly not. So famously, so when Sarah Schneerer wanted to found Beis Yaakov, she went to the Belzeruv and to the Chofetz Chaim. And they both gave their blessing for the opening of Beis Yaakov, for the simple, for a very sociologically straightforward reason, which is that in those times, that's when the girls started having to go to school to learn secular subjects.
Right. And wasting their time reading romance novels.
Exactly. So said the Belzeruv and the Chofetz Chaim that if a girl is going to go to school and learn only secular subjects, and now she's going to be, her mind is going to be involved in secular subjects, and her whole Torah education, which is only from the home, which is how it used to be, that a girl would just be brought up in the home and be taught the halachas and saying brachas and whatever, all these things, we've been taught in the home. So it's not going to work. She's going to say, why? I go to school to learn this. This is a serious pursuit. And I don't go to school to learn that. That's not as serious. They're going to go off the derech.
They do.
Which is as exactly happened in a lot of places, which is that the men were a lot more firmer than the women. In Lithuania, for example.
They wanted to marry, and there was nobody for them to
right.
marry.
So in a lot of Bachurim got married very late because there was no girl who wanted to marry a serious Torah scholar, because she, even if she remained observant, and if you look at pictures also, you sometimes see in rabbinic families... See that the men have the long coats and the hats and the long beards, and the women are dressed in the latest fashions. And famously, that's why it started that in Lithuania, that a lot of women started not to cover their hair. You know, again, if they were otherwise observant, because they didn't absorb it from the home as much, and they didn't learn it in school.
Could you translate this somewhat differently and say that you should not teach your daughter, but you can have someone else teach her?
No, it means to have arranged to have her taught. No. Nice.
No. What about the schools that teach the girls Gemara?
Oh, we'll get there in a second. Yes, that's an excellent question.
School? Anyway, you see the that changes...
Right.
Responds to historical.
Correct.
And sociological changes in the world. Right.
So that's why the Beis Yaakov movement was an unbelievable thing that helped. And there was the women who then started pulling their husbands to be more religious in many times, because they learned this. They learned the Beis Yaakov more correcting. So then there's another school of thinking that in more modern schools, that's just sociologically the mice of what they are. In the more modern schools, they even teach girls nowadays Gemara. So who needs that? So Beis Yaakov, they don't teach girls Gemara. Well, when Beis Yaakov was first founded, maybe it wasn't necessary. But the question is, and nowadays, so Rav Soloveitchik held, others agree as well. Again, happens to be from the more left spectrum, but relatively speaking, Rav Soloveitchik is not a liberal, but more modern type of gedolim, let's say, well, we're just following in this this idea that the Belzeruv and the Chofetz Chaim allowed for Beis Yaakov. Nowadays, a woman can go to, it's just societal. The Chazal were, no, did not impose, they didn't say, didn't darshan the Chumash that you, there's an absolute rule, girls are not allowed to learn. You see that the fact that the Chofetz Sefer Chinuch says right here that in theory a woman gets a schar for learning Torah. So Rav Soloveitchik says, nowadays, women go to college, they could get a PhD, they could become...
President of the United States.
They could become president... Okay, well, not that a Jewish woman should be doing that. But I don't think a Jewish man should be president of the United States either. Okay.
I know.
But that's why they asked, famously, Rav Soloveitchik, when Golda Meir became prime minister of Israel, so they asked Rav Soloveitchik, "New Rebbe, how could it be that a woman is president of Israel? Isn't that usher?" So Rav Soloveitchik responded, "And Ben Gurion was mutter." So
she's the only man in my cabinet.
Anyway, so the idea being that now that woman could get a PhD, she could go to any field, she could become a doctor, a lawyer, anything. Her education is totally open to her. So there's no reason why should she be any less intellectually challenged learning Torah than in these areas. Yeah.
I thought, famously, Rav Soloveitchik held that certain characteristics people had were ontological, right? As you know, women want to get married and have children,
Right. So, okay. So I guess the eldest wasn't one of those examples, because again, classically in Chazal, it's not per se usher for a woman with a strong intellect to. And nowadays we assume that instead of weak intellect, so nowadays we assume girls have strong intellects. But the Beis Yaakov schools, or the more right wing schools that don't. Even if they teach halacha from the sources and they teach chumash inside with the commentators, they don't feel it's necessary to go to that level to teach Gemara. Right.
Especially if you haven't gotten a PhD in philosophy from the University of Berlin and know what ontological means.
Right, so that's
need to know what
so that's why they don't feel it, because again, there is some at least ontological. That she's the Maisa, she's not going to be focused on that. Most women are still going to be focused, especially in the Orthodox community, are still going to be focused on raising families and getting married and not necessarily so much on their careers. That's why in those types of schools, they don't make a point of teaching Gemara to girls. Although, I personally, there's a lot to be said to Rav Soloveitchik. If she, not necessarily should teach Gemara to girls in the exact same intensity and quantity and level that you teach boys, but to intentionally withhold women, especially who want to learn girls from a particular field of Torah when they can get PhDs in other subjects, doesn't make too much sense to
but
me.
Then you can end up with the practical consequence that the guys who are learning Gemara starting in fifth grade or whatever end up knowing virtually nothing, and the girls who've had a systematic education in the skills
I agree.
Are actually equipped to do it.
The part of the problem also, though, is that if you're going to learn Gemara, the really best way to do it is to start very young and just immerse yourself hours and hours a day. And it's a terrific hardship for the Jewish community to have all these young men, especially when they get to be younger men who could work and like that, spend all this time, learning Gemara, to go ahead and have the women do it too.
Okay, so again, that's why I said maybe
somebody actually has to work for a living and
right. So again, maybe we could argue about what the correct approach is lamaisa for boys and girls differently. But again, my whole point is that to specifically withhold it doesn't seem to make too much sense, at least.
But how do you explain?
Well, just one more paragraph. The overall zev velo limed as beno Torah chiyed alikros b'sefer Torah v'yom perush haksuvim kibshatim. You don't have to do the basic thing, which is to teach them how to read the sefer Torah and to understand the psukim, read the correct vowels and trop, which is another problem, by the way, that some people simply just mispronounce things. Where were they growing up? I don't know. And if for yourself, not just for teaching, if you can learn and you don't, then your punishment is very great. This is the mother mitzvah for all mitzvahs. Sorry. Yeah.